It's time for Motherlode Views, a look at the issues important to the quality of life in the Motherlode. Motherlode Views is brought to you by Nate's Tree Service. No job is too big or too small. Call 532-2460.
Well, good morning and welcome to Motherlode Views. I'm BJ Hansen, your host. We are continuing a five-part series in which we talk with the five Tuolumne County Board of Supervisors individually. It's a chance to hear straight from the board members about issues facing their specific district and the county as a whole. Today, we're joined by the District 5 Supervisor, Jaron Brandon, who happens to be the board chair for 2025. Supervisor Brandon, thanks for coming on Motherlode Views.
BJ, thanks as always for having me.
How has this past year been going so far as board chair?
You know, it's challenging as board chair. It's challenging when you have new board members coming on. I think it's a bit of a mixed bag. In some ways, I'm really happy that having been on the board for 4 years, I'm in this role this year to help with some of the new members transitioning on with some of the big challenges that we've had. I think some of the departures we've had at the county has created space for, you know, new leadership, new creativity, new skills to be brought in. That's going to be very healthy. And yet, when, you know, we looked at, say, the Measure Z not passing and wanting to maintain what is our number one priority, fire, and public safety and law enforcement, we are having to do a lot of cuts. And I think there's a growing period and a learning period, too. And hopefully people are watching to see there were opportunities to be more efficient. We're taking those opportunities, but we also don't have large pots of money sitting all around. We are really struggling to make sure we can maintain the investments that people expect at a quality and a level and at points of access that they expect. So it has been a tough year, but I think that's probably when leadership's the most important. So I'm happy to be doing it this year, but it is a little bit of extra work for sure.
Being the board chair and having two new board members as well, how would you describe the board dynamics among the five right now?
I think it's still trying to figure out exactly what that's going to look like. There's been some comments in the year that's concerning to me. I'll tell you, I always believe in a governance mentality. We are five people elected by five different districts to work on countywide issues. They're nonpartisan offices, and everybody should be checking all of that at the door, coming in, ready to work with their minds open on it. I think when you come off the campaign immediately, there's a little bit of going from what people think is happening to what is actually happening in all of those meetings, the kind of tagging in every now and then to then working a 40-hour week, actually going through these programs. All to say is I think it is hopefully getting better. There's been some concerning comments about, you know, well, there's a majority here or this has to be directed. I think that's one of the biggest things we're grappling with right now is we are a team of five. We are all Tuolumne County. We are all trying to solve, in large part, the same issues. And I don't think there are really nearly as wide of a gap in what people may think in disagreement. But we need to show as leaders that we're working together, especially in these times where it's so divided. So all to say is I think we're in a period that, especially with the departure of some key staff leaders, I knew that would be somewhat off-balancing for the organization. I'm anticipating that, I don't know by the time this airs, but hopefully soon after, we will have a highly skilled and well-chosen county administrative officer joining in, and that person is going to be able to then more permanently work with the board on some of the areas like rebuilding the community development department and something that's very important to me, which is having a five-year financial plan that's not only cuts and efficiencies, but it's also priorities and looking at revenue generation. Where are we investing to put ourselves next year and in 10 years on a better footing than we are today?
What are your thoughts and opinions about all the change in county government? As mentioned, some high-level leaders have mm-hmm. left and people are going to be coming in.
Some is good. Some is concerning. Honestly, I think you can get a organization that can become too institutionalized at the top. We need to see our elected leaders have the ability to lead. And you can only do that if you're receiving fair information. You're being kept informed of that. You have a lot of trust in the staff that serve the county to be able to do their job and provide that. So in some of these departures, I think it's a positive thing because it opens up, okay, What's the personality? What's the skill set? What's the background we actually need right now? Do we need more of an accountant type person? Do we need more of a leader with vision coming in? Do we need somebody who's very good with people? Or do we want more of a number cruncher? Those are really good conversations to have. You can't have that if all of those leadership positions are filled. I do really worry about ones where, for example, we had our chief legal counsel ended up leaving. And, you know, it was a highly paid position in the scope of the market, was not all that highly paid, but, you know, lawyers make a lot of money. The whole package was about $300,000 if you look benefits, pension, and all of that. And yet, to replace that skill set, because we didn't get any applications to go do that, it's a hard job. It's a highly skilled job. There's a lot at risk for taxpayers. If we screw up because we didn't check a legal box, everybody in Tuolumne County could be on the line for that. We are now paying a consultant, an outside firm, about the same amount of money for effectively, you know, 40% of the time. And it's not to talk down on that, but that's the reality, is some of these departures are concerning because we're losing somebody with a ton of experience, knowledge of our county in depth that people work well with. We are sometimes replacing them with a consulting contract that does not provide the same value. And we are struggling to, I think, hire. So it's a mixed bag. I think what we started at the beginning of the year was like you take a plant. Sometimes the roots bound themselves inside of a pot. You need to open that up so that you can put it into a bigger pot, right? I think later what we're talking about is some people having, especially our employees, a lack of confidence that the public is there to want to support them in their success, or they viewed as kind of those bureaucrats over there. And as representatives of that, you know, are the board leaders taking action to do the best we can to get the highest qualified people working for our county services and making sure we treat them well? Because otherwise they'll vote with their feet. We're in a market. They do not have to stay here. And that's something that it kind of pains me a bit, because I know how hard they work. And I know that they choose to work in Tuolumne County, generally not because of the paycheck, but because of the community. But you have to have a good environment, good manager, and a good, I think, community response too to that, to keep those people, because they're doing it out of love.
Getting into a lot of countywide issues during this first segment of Motherload Views. The Supervisor Brandon is the board chairman for 2025. We're going to get into district-specific questions during this next segment. Motherload Views is brought to you by Nate's Tree Service, where no job is too big or too small. Our second segment coming up in just a minute.
Nate's Tree Service does more than trim trees. Nate's will remove tree hazards, clean storm damage, provide CDF fire clearance, eliminate beetle infestation, chip brush, and so much more. Nate's Tree Service is licensed, bonded, and insured. They even carry workers' comp for their employees for your protection. No job is too big or too small in the Tri-County area for family-owned and operated Nate's Tree Service. Call 532-2460. That's 532-2460.
Welcome you back to Motherload Views. I'm BJ Hansen, your host. We're in the midst of our five-part series talking with the individual Tuolumne County supervisors. During earlier shows, we heard from Steve Griefer, Ryan Campbell, and Anaya Kirk. This weekend, we're hearing from Supervisor Jaron Brandon. Next week, we're going to hear from Supervisor Mike Holland. Supervisor Brandon, I want to get into some district-specific issues. Mm-hmm. So District 5, you know, take us around your district, what it all entails.
Absolutely, yeah. So it covers largely Columbia and Jamestown. So it's everything west of the city of Sonora is kind of the approximate area, and it is the best district in the county. So,
two state parks, that's a rarity for a supervisor district.
Yeah, it is, yeah. And to have them as assets and community assets, but also to be able to live in, I live in Columbia, I grew up partly in both areas, a couple blocks off of Main Street there. It's wonderful. The cute, charming towns, beautiful communities. I think Jamestown's in a really good spot right now for investment and new businesses starting. You know, the Willows starting back up. I'm very excited for what the future holds for District 5.
Have there been many recent projects or things on the horizon getting into Jamestown first?
Yeah, absolutely. There's a lot of always small stuff. So we're looking at, you know, Rawhide Bridge, vegetation management, you know, working just to try and keep things going. There's some work on the lighting district with the economic development folks. See if we can get better park lighting, better street lighting, maybe replace those just ugly. I've always hated the orange sodium bulbs. Get some nice mellow light in the evening, make it a little more comfortable to walk. In a larger context, of course, the resort, I mean, it's been open with Chicken Ranch Rancheria for a while. I think we're starting to see what that's looking like over a year of, you know, the traffic flow, the visitor flow patterns there. I've been working to try and get some investment funding to do business attraction, get some new places started, especially after that sidewalk project. If you haven't walked in Jamestown, you know, the last couple of years, please come by. We had a lot of problems before. That has made it such a more pleasant and pleasurable experience to go around there. And a lot, I think, is maintaining too. You know, we used to have a lot of encampments. The encampments are largely gone. We used to have a lot of drug houses. Those drug houses, thanks to the work of our Tuolumne Narcotics Team, the Sheriff's Office, those who've been investigated, they've been shut down. And so in a lot of ways, Jamestown is in a much better spot. But it's in a spot where we need entrepreneurs, we need investors, we need people that want to go start stuff. With the Matheson Clinic, eventually we'll be at Fifth Avenue there, putting in a new office building. They will be moving likely some of the ones off Main Street, leaving behind really great places for a small business to start, whether it's retail or, you know, the Snore's got a great sourdough shop now too. I mean, that type of stuff. If you have a dream in it, there's spaces now. There's going to be more spaces in the future. The Willow's reopening. The Jamestown Hotel is reopening. I think we're just seeing a lot of activity. So that's really encouraging to me. I think the biggest thing is in Columbia right now as it approaches a lot of the... You mind if I jump ahead?
Let's go to Columbia.
Okay, good.
We may go back to Jamestown, but let's go to Columbia for
now. Is looking at the fire station. I mean, that is the most pressing issue because, you know, and frankly, even if you don't live in Columbia, you should be concerned about Columbia not having a fire station. It is a high fire risk area, but one of the reasons it was chosen is it's greater than a 15-minute response gap from a state resource kind of perspective. All to say is it's one of the least served areas in that sense, especially by the county. You got irreplaceable cultural assets, not just for that community, but for the entire state, honestly, to an extent for the United States. And you are dealing with a lot of older construction. That is an area that needs to have fire protection. It also should have on-site fire service that can serve the airports. So we've been working through trying to get a station at the Pereira House, which is right off the airport property. One of the big issues we've been working on with the county is getting the audits up to date. With our new auditor, Donnie McNair, he's been doing fantastic. I think we're giving him all the support and resources that he needs. He is catching up quickly. From the reports, it's been doing about lightning speed of 2 to 1, two reports at the same time. When we have that, we hope to be able to get CDBG funding, which would help us build the station. Right now, it's hosted at Columbia College, and it is in existence, but that's a temporary arrangement, and we're appreciative of our Columbia College partners. But we have to get that station up, because as we know, with a lightning complex fire, every fire starts with it's a little flame somewhere. If you saw the other 20 fires that were a part of that, many of them did not break 1 acre. A few of them went to 60 or 70. When you're not able to respond within that 15-minute gap, you end up with that 70 going to 1,000, going to 10,000, and it becomes exponentially more difficult. If Columbia was to burn, there's a strong chance it could threaten Sonora. It could get into the forest. Even with the Cerro project, there is still a risk there if it's sufficiently kind of taken off. That could burn all the way to up the 108 corridor into looking at Phoenix Lake and Soulsville and even up to Twain Hart. If you ever driven out to Camp 9 using the Forest Service roads, you know that the access back there is difficult and there is a lot of fuel. So I think the main thing for Columbia, besides we have wonderful events, please go follow the Chamber on Facebook, spend some money. We're going to have some Halloween stuff. It's going to be great. Same with Jamestown. There's fun stuff happening. In terms of policy in the county, we have to keep that fire station, and we have to do whatever it takes to be able to support our firefighters.
How do you find that balance of funding those fire needs, but also having the other county things that also have funding?
Got to be smart. Smart about it. That's all it is. You know, like when we came in, I say we, this was, you know, when a lot of the board members had switched in 2021, there were things we weren't doing that have allowed us to have more flexibility with the money. Now, part of it was there was a reasonably okay economic growth period. No black swan too much. Inflation was hard, but otherwise it was growing. But we always look for state and federal grants. We take advantage of opportunities as they come up. So broadband money or air quality mitigation money to get sidewalks, or if we're able to get for OES money and emergency disaster stuff, the resiliency centers. And of course, we do this for the forest health projects. We do this for our housing policy reforms. We do this for some of the economic development efforts or our water position, tracking, you know, a lot of our watershed management. All to say is government's not easy. It's not magic. There's not just more money that comes in if you elect somebody different. The problems are the same. What we've done is be able to better bill the state services for what we use locally, be able to bring in more grant and federal funding from the state and federal government, supporting some of these programs. We had invested in people that made us as ready as possible to accept it and deploy that funding. And then I think we made disciplined choices. You know, the Facebook peanut gallery, you know, is going to go argue about whatever it wants to. Truth be told, there was very little position growth. Most of them were targeted to, I think, grant or revenue generating positions. Tens of millions of dollars was brought in across all of those positions, and it put us in a much better spot. Once you've done all the things that you're trying to be smart about and you're trying to be disciplined with the budgeting, is the hard part, which is the right sizing government. Problem is, people say right sizing and they don't really say what they actually want to cut. When we go through, it's not a matter of determining what's a priority. I know what a priority is for me. To prioritize something is to put something else at a lower priority. And that, I think, has been the challenge of what do we cut? Do we remove a position that's very successful as an admin and bringing in grant money? Or do we lose a groundskeeper, an IT worker, and a facilities person? Do we eliminate a department that we can have merge into another but then increase their workload? So those are some of the things we're deciding now, is trying to maintain the service the best we can and do so more efficiently. But there are limits to what can be done with that method before you end up with burnout and retention issues, and ultimately more cost and lower level of service to taxpayers. So that's what we're working through. And I think we've taken the action we need to on those reductions. We are going to be in a process of rebuilding.
Going back to Jamestown for one more item, the Jamestown mm-hmm. Sanitary District has had a lot of questions about rate increases and the future of infrastructure. Yes. As a supervisor, is that something that you get involved with as well?
Yeah, I'm intimately familiar with it. Thank you for bringing that up as well. The Jamestown Sanitary District isn't under our direct management. It's a separate special district, utility district. But it is one of the most pressing issues that Jamestown faces. There's going to be some upcoming meetings. I highly encourage residents going to it. But, you know, the shortest answer is there were mistakes made, you know, 10 years ago in the past that accumulated debt. And the way that their system is built, they're reliant on the TUD system, which means they have to treat their stuff to the TUD standard. And to move it up to that level, because TUD is already there, is really expensive. So we have 850 people that manage and own that district. It is their district, right? It is government. It's public. But you have a $16 million tertiary upgrade that's required because of that. That is very hard to figure out when you can't pay the loan repayments on it. Trust me, everybody knows, you know, if you know the government money, the government will go after it. Jamestown Sanitary owes the banks and the government money for that plant that was built. And none of us may have had any contribution to it, but it still exists. And so there's really going to be three options. One of them is the rates go up. Basically, the district finds an option to pay its bills. I know its staff are working incredibly hard. They've already found a grant that could maybe cover half that upfront equipment capital expenditure cost. But it's a huge hit. It's a huge hit to make sure that that district is solvent. Right now, they've got maybe 3 years left of reserves before option two happens. Option two is the creditors take them to court. They assign a lawyer to basically run the district at a very high expense. And the first thing that lawyer is going to do is raise all the rates and be ultimately unaccountable to the people. And it happens in other areas. That's what happens to failed districts. And the third option is it merges with TUD. But there's no guarantee, to my knowledge. It seems more than likely, again, we would be trading five local electeds to one elected on a board of five that's struggled to basically fill itself. And we would still end up with a fee for Jamestown residents in that district because the debt doesn't go away and the capital expenditure doesn't go away. It would be very generous of TUD to, I think, take over those expenses. I think it would still end up with a rate increase to Jamestown. The biggest thing out of this is what hard pill do we want to take with it? As people that care about that area, but just recognizing the realities, because I would love it to not have to happen. But those are some of the options. I think there is an option, though, is do we want Jamestown to be a dependent element on TUD or another system? Or would we rather use this as an opportunity to elevate Jamestown to like Twain Harp or Groveland or even to the city of Sonora, where it could be a community service district? If we merge all of those areas for the first time in its history, Jamestown could have five elected officials, its own management, some of its own rules, and be able to have independence from the county. And as an area that I think has some of the most opportunity of any area in Tuolumne County, I think Jamestown being able to choose what it wants to do with that opportunity makes the most sense. So my encouragement is folks should call me, call the district if you have questions. There are really not options besides those three. If the answer is to just go no, that's option two, which is the worst. Do not pick option two. You do not want a lawyer running the district and not asking your opinion. But what are we buying out of it? I think we should buy Jamestown's independence.
You take one more break, talking with Supervisor Jaron Brandon. It's part of our five-part series, talking with the individual supervisors about issues facing their specific district and the county as a whole. Motherload Views is brought to you by Nate's Tree Service, where no job is too big or too small. Programming note, next week on Motherload Views, we're going to be having the final segment in our series. We'll be talking with District 1 Supervisor Mike Holland. If you missed any of the past Motherload View shows, you can find them archived in the media section of mymotherload.com. Our final segment is coming up in just a minute.
Nate's Tree Service does more than trim trees. Nate's will remove tree hazards, clean storm damage, provide CDF fire clearance, eliminate beetle infestation, chip brush, and so much more. Nate's Tree Service is licensed, bonded, and insured. They even carry workers' comp for their employees for your protection. No job is too big or too small in the Tri-County area for family-owned and operated Nate's Tree Service. Call 532-2460. That's 532-2460.
And we welcome you back to Motherload Views. I'm BJ Hansen, your host. We're in the midst of our five-part series talking with the individual Tuolumne County supervisors about issues facing their district and the county as a whole. Today we're joined by the board chair who represents District 5, Jaron Brandon. Supervisor Brandon, one thing I want to ask you about next is, as you have been board chair, we unfortunately had the fire in Chinese Camp, the TCU September Lightning Complex fire. Mm-hmm. I know you've been involved with that effort and some of the planning for a fundraiser that's coming up. So what can you tell us about all that?
Yeah, no, and thank you for the opportunity. It's been one of those years that we're very thankful for the investments we've done in public safety, in the emergency service office, in that, as tragic as it is, our services worked. It was a multi-start incident fire. I think it was 20, 25 different starts across that very short period of time. But what happened in Chinese Camp is it's horrifying. If you've driven through, and I was there with the sheriff, and undersheriff on the fire lines, seeing firsthand some of the buildings go up even between going in and out. You know, it's there and then it's in flames. That we're dealing with a near total loss in terms of what the actual town is. There are still structures left, but I'm happy to say we, with our staff and OES, Dory Beats, who's an amazing county asset, qualified individual assistance from FEMA. This is only the second time that we've ever qualified that, which means a higher level of aid that's going to be coming in. And Dory's done fantastic work. She got both of them in there. We're currently in the process of the debris removal plan. We're going to be opting for a county-run process. People can go onto their property and do what they want to with it. The problem is some of these programs, if they start touching the stuff, it could potentially render them ineligible. And that would be out of our hands. So we're advising folks to just hold tight for now while we conduct this cleanup, maybe a couple months. Where my concern mostly is right now, because I think our staff are doing a really good job at handling working with people and keeping them in communication, is what does the long-term recovery plan look like? It is more than just people rebuilding their homes or helping those who are uninsured. But what does the main street look like, the historic buildings? How do we give Chinese Camp a future again? And so many areas that have burned from, you know, I mean, Grizzly Flats, Mariposa, Paradise, they've struggled with that element. What I'm going to be proposing is to bring forward an item for a reconstruction plan to the board, that the county would fund a rebuilding plan for Chinese Camp to make sure that it is define exactly what we want, and we're in a position to ask for funding and support to bring in state and I think notable leaders, potentially insurance commissioner candidates, governor candidates, folks that need to see firsthand what is happening, as well as partners and the railroad and the nonprofit. The state parks are mentioned, that this is a historic asset for the entire state that deserves to be rebuilt and preserved. And look at how we might be able to bring utilities down to that area so that folks can be on public water and sewer rather than having to go rebuild their own septics and wells and have all of those issues. In line with that, one of the big things is while we have these programs that can come help with debris, we'll have some individual assistance. There's going to be Small Business Administration, SBA, low-interest loans for those. You always need flexible money because there's things that aren't going to fit that. I've been working with a small group, including the Chamber of Commerce for the county, on a fundraising benefit that will be, I think, when this airs a few weeks out. It will be November 14th from 6 to 8 p.m. at Chicken Ranch Rancheria. And we're going to be looking for sponsors. We're going to be selling tickets. The goal of this event is to raise real money. It is to raise $300,000 for the victims of Chinese Camp. Right now, we have in-kind and cash donations pledged of about $100,000 for this. So we're looking for small businesses. We're looking for families or workforce teams. We're looking for benefactors and individuals who would like to sponsor something. They'd like to donate raffle items. They'd like to come participate. It will be a wonderful evening, the best of the hospitality offered by Chicken Ranch Rancheria, who is a founding kind of sponsor and partner in this. We're also going to be looking to sell tickets. So please check it out. I think we'll have a website up and ticket link and everything there. The goal is we want to give Chinese Camp not just the support they deserve as disaster victims, but as a community, an actual path to recovery, rebuilding, economic opportunity, and figuring out something that's doing right by them. This would be through the Sonora Area Foundation, which they do a fantastic job with their team. So thank you for giving me the opportunity to talk about that. We're going to continue to bring in folks from nonprofit builders that have worked up at the Caldor Fire and Grizzly Flats area. Also to the Butte County Supervisors and Paradise Town Council. We want to bring in folks who have lived this before, so we really do our best that we can for the Chinese Camp survivors.
Supervisor Brandon, we've got about 30 seconds left. Not going to get into your Senate campaign, but how has that been balancing running for Senate and also being the board chair this year?
Well, I'll tell you, it's going good. And I'll leave it at that with it. I'm used to working long weeks. This is just an extension to that. So whether it's 6-7 days a week, 10-12 hours a day, it's phone calls, it's meeting a lot of people. It's taking all the lessons we've learned here, all the great work we've done, and expanding it to how can we help other communities. So that, though it's a lot of time, it can be exhausting at points. It doesn't always feel like work. It feels very hopeful.
Well, Jaron Brandon, thanks for coming in today and being our guest on Motherload Views.
MJ, thank you, and happy Halloween.
Again, we thank Jaron Brandon, District 5 Supervisor, for joining us. I'm BJ Hansen. I was your host. We'll see you back next week for more Motherload Views.
You've been listening to Motherload Views, a look at the issues important to the quality of life in the Motherload. Motherload Views has been brought to you by Nate's Tree Service, where no job is too big or too small. Call 532-2460.